died from several asthma attacks. Once I tried to run away and was rescued by some strangers who took me to the local labour bureau, but the labour bureau sold me again to another illegal brick kiln. 6 or 7 years ago, the illegal brick kilns in that area were exposed by the national media. Many of them were closed down, and many child labourers were saved. Most of them were of the same age and background as me. All of them were missing persons. I met a number of reporters then, and one of them was Miao Miao from a Guangzhou paper. We hit it off especially well, and she told me I should write an article describing what had happened to me. I didn't write anything very good, but Miao Miao really liked it and wanted me to help get it published. Then I was sent back to school. My mother died quite young, and my father went south to work. I went back to school to do the first year of middle school over again. A year or so later, I got a letter from Miao Miao. She said the media had all been told that they were not to publish any more news about the illegal brick kilns because it would damage the nation's image. My piece couldn't be published. It could only be posted on the popular liberal internet website, Tianya. I received quite a few comments until it was harmonised off the net by the web police. Miao Miao gave me her email address, and when I went into town, I sent her an email to tell her I didn't want to go to school anymore. There was nobody with me at home, and I wanted to go and find a job. Miao Miao wrote back and told me to come to Beijing and stay with her. She quit her job on the paper in Guangzhou and moved back to Beijing. She said the office world was too horrible and the pressure was too great. She'd rather be a freelance writer and work from home. Just after my 17th birthday, I went to Huarou District outside Beijing to find Miao Miao. She now lived in the countryside. She taught me how to make love and how to play the guitar. I discovered she was an excellent cook and baked cakes and cookies too. She had 3 cats and 3 dogs, all strays that she'd brought home with her. She said that before the Beijing Olympics, there were so many demolitions and relocations that many people left their dogs and cats behind. And so Beijing was full of strays. Even valuable golden retrievers became dog meat and were sold for only 7 yuan a pound in the farmer's market. I was also a stray that she'd taken in, and now I didn't have to worry when my asthma flared up. She wrote articles and television scripts to provide for us. Sometimes I would work at a nearby pet clinic, and I became very chummy with the clinic staff because I was always bringing cats and dogs in for treatment. Miao Miao had bought a small house from some peasants. It had 3 north-facing rooms, a separate kitchen, and a bathroom with a shower. But we lived there very happily with all the cats and dogs for 1 year and 3 months, until Miao Miao turned 32. Then we heard the whole country was in chaos and people in Beijing were very frightened. The first thing we worried about was running out of food, both for ourselves and for our dogs and cats. When another crackdown was announced, things settled down, but Miao Miao wouldn't go outside for fear I might be arrested. Well, I stayed indoors for 1 month. Food supplies were very short then, and many people abandoned their pets on the streets again. Every time Miao Miao came home, she brought more dogs and cats with her. Some of them were sick or injured, so we had over 12 dogs and cats living with us, and I learned how to take care of them. Winter passed, and people suddenly became more prosperous, and everyone started smiling. But then something hard to understand happened to Miao Miao. She suddenly didn't recognize me, didn't recognize anyone. Whenever she met anyone, she just nodded her head and smiled, but didn't say a word. She only took care of her dogs and cats, baking some sugar-free cookies for them every couple of days. She no longer wrote articles or played the guitar. When she felt the need, we would make love, but she no longer discussed anything with me. I always knew that all the time I was in Beijing, she was taking some sort of drug when she thought I wasn't looking. Then she'd be completely spaced out for a while and wouldn't recognize anyone. This usually only lasted for about 30 minutes, but this time she didn't recover. I knew it was now time for me to take care of her, but I couldn't support us on our part-time work alone. So I did something that I hoped Miao Miao would forgive me for. I secretly began to sell off our cats and dogs, beginning with the new kittens and puppies. Of course, I didn't sell them to the dog meat dealers. Because the economy was good, many people had started to keep household cats and dogs again. I was already very good at breeding and raising them. I'd raise a few and sell off a few. We always had cats and dogs in the house, and Miao Miao would feed whichever one she saw because she loved them all equally. I still practiced my guitar for 3 hours a day. Some nights, I would tell Miao Miao I was going out to listen to music, but she wouldn't respond. I took a long bus trip to Wu Dao Gou and went to some places Miao Miao used to take me when I could see live performances. I felt pretty bad if I didn't get to listen to live music. I would always meet some vaguely remembered people there and play a few numbers with them. They often told me how much they liked my Spanish guitar, and if they needed a guitarist for one of their gigs, they would ask me to join them. Then I went home and practiced even harder, mastering all the chords and techniques you taught me, Miao Miao, and waiting to go to Wu Dao Gou to perform. I never imagined that something would happen to me the first night I went on stage. When I got a call asking me to perform, I prepared dinner for you and our cats and dogs at 5 o'clock, then said goodbye and took off for Wu Dao Gou. As usual, the performance would end too late for me to get home, so afterwards I was going to find a place to take a nap and wait for the first bus back in the morning. This time, when I went into town, I went first to a small restaurant in Lan Chi Ying to have something to eat. The place was crowded with little room between the tables. There was a man and a woman at the next table, and the man was talking non-stop in an accent just like that Taiwanese variety show host. I couldn't understand what he was talking about, but suddenly the woman started talking in a Beijing accent. Then I realized that she was actually cursing the government. Ever since China's golden age of ascendancy officially began 2 years ago, I'd noticed that everyone was getting pretty strange. Everyone I met was extremely happy, and you would hardly ever hear anyone say anything unpleasant. I couldn't figure out why everyone was so weird, so I just pretended to be happy too. So I had a very unusual feeling when I heard this auntie cursing the government. But I never imagined that the Taiwanese guy would actually start having a go at her. "Your government is wonderful," he said. "They take such good care of you. You mainlanders don't know how to be grateful. You think it's an easy thing to feed 1.3 billion people? What right do you have to criticize the government? What do you women know anyway?" Maybe it was because he kept saying "you" and "we" that it made me feel uncomfortable. When I paid my bill and was about to leave, I noticed that his arse was only half on his chair, and so I deliberately bumped into his chair on the way out. He fell on the floor, and I just walked on out the door without even looking back. I didn't see anyone rushing out after me either. I went on to the little restaurant called Five Flavors, where I was due to play, and the band performed pretty well. The atmosphere was fantastic, and I made 200 yuan. Then the guys in the band invited me to drink some beers with them to celebrate my first live performance, they said. It was 2 in the morning when we finally broke up. I thought I'd just tough it out until dawn. But I was a little sleepy because of all the beer, so I sat down against the wall of a building near the bus stop to get a little shut-eye. I just closed my eyes when 5 or 6 people started beating me all over with wooden clubs. I didn't even have time to fight back. Was it that Taiwanese guy come back for revenge? I'm pretty strong, but I really couldn't take it. And the gang suddenly cleared off. I couldn't breathe. And my left arm felt like it was broken. I was lying on my right arm, and I couldn't get my asthma inhaler out of my trouser pocket. Just then, someone walked by, and I moaned and gestured for him to help me get the inhaler out of my pocket, but he just didn't understand. I knew I was going to die. Miao Miao, at that time, all I could think was, if I die, who's going to take care of you? And what will happen to our cats and dogs? Miao Miao, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have been so reckless. I shouldn't have knocked that guy's chair. If I die now, I kept thinking, who'll take care of you? What will happen to our cats and dogs? Suddenly, somehow, I had my inhaler against my mouth and I knew that I wasn't gonna die. I'm strong. They can beat me, but they can't kill me. When I woke up, I was lying in a hospital bed. I heard the nurse calling, "Hey, the boy you brought in is waking up." Then an older man came up to my bed. I didn't know him. "Please, get my trousers," I mustered enough strength to say. He brought them over. I asked him to take out 500 renminbi out of the pocket. Then I asked him for paper and pen and wrote down Miao Miao's address in Hua Ru, the brand name of the pet food we use and how much to buy, also some flour and eggs and so on, and asked him to buy them for me and take them to Miao Miao. I didn't know whether that man would take off with my money or be willing to go to Hua Ru. I couldn't even really understand why he'd stayed around at the hospital waiting for me to wake up. I couldn't be bothered with all that. My only worry was what might happen to you if you ran out of food. The next morning, he came back and told me he'd delivered the groceries. He said a woman took them in, and when he told her I was in hospital, she just smiled slightly and nodded her head. She offered him some cookies. "You have quite a collection of cats and dogs at home," he said. I was very relieved when I heard that. He came to see me again that afternoon. "Why are you looking after me?" I asked. He said that when he saw me lying on the ground panting for breath and fumbling for my pocket, he realized I was asthmatic. He was too, and had been taking corticosteroids for a long time, so he took my inhaler out of my pocket. "Since I take corticosteroids too," he went on, "I wanted to know what it was like for other people with asthma." "What do you want to know?" "To see if you think other people are different from you." "Of course they're different. They don't have asthma." "Are they happy?" When he said that, I felt like I'd received an electric shock. "It's not that I'm not happy. I haven't been unhappy since I started living with Mao Mao a few years ago. She doesn't talk to me now, but we're still not unhappy. But for the last 2 years, I've felt that there is something different about the people I meet. I can't say exactly what it is, but they seem to be unusually happy. Whatever it is, I feel like I'm different from them. Even when we're happy, we have a different sort of happiness." He watched me intently, waiting for my answer, so I nodded my head. He looked as excited as if he'd just hit the jackpot. Then he glanced around like he was afraid someone was spying on us. "I finally found the answer," he said. "It's only those of us who are on asthma medication who are not high. This is our secret." I hadn't a clue what he was talking about. "Have the people around you all forgotten that month?" he asked. "What month?" "The month when the world economy went into crisis and China's golden age of ascendancy officially began." I didn't understand. "Doesn't everybody say that the two events, the world economy going into crisis and China's golden age of ascendancy officially starting, happened simultaneously with no time at all in between?" he asked. "But there was actually a one-month gap between those two events, or more precisely, there were 28 days, counting from the first working day after the spring holidays," he continued. "Do you find that when you talk about the whole country being in turmoil, the panic buying of food, the army entering the city, the public security forces cracking down and the entire population receiving the bird flu vaccine, nobody remembers these things?" I guess he said all this because I was slow to respond. I started thinking how true it was that nobody talked about these things anymore. It certainly was like they thought such things had never taken place, but I didn't know if they really had forgotten. "Then I guess you've forgotten too," he said, as he sat down and hung his head. "I was wrong. It was so much wishful thinking." "Uncle," I said, "I remember."
"You remember?"
His face lit up. "Yeah, I remember everything that happened that year." He still looked at me skeptically. "I remember running around all over buying up pet food, and I remember being afraid to go outside during the security crackdown."
"That's wonderful. Wonderful! Thank God I finally found somebody who remembers," he exclaimed. "What's your name, little brother?"
"Zhang Du."
"Little brother, Zhang Du. I'm Fang Chao Di, but you can call me Old Fang." From now on, you're my good brother. A brother closer than a flesh and blood brother. Because you're the only brother of mine who remembers what happened that month. You absolutely must not forget the things you remember now. We've got to find that lost month. I would do whatever he said because he'd save me and Meow Meow and our cats and dogs. I also said to myself, you must never forget that you are a stray that Meow Meow took in, and Meow Meow treats you better than anybody else.
Die Medien tun aber auch so, die Medien haben diese Sache mit dem Arsch-Pivot oder Arsch-Equilibre, also dem Gleichgewichts- oder Scharnieralter, hochgeschrieben, weil natürlich von vornherein geplant war, dass diese Maßnahme eventuell zur Verhandlungsmasse gehört und eventuell zurückgezogen wird. Und die bürgerlichen Medien, der Teil, der massive, erhebliche Teil, der im Kern gegen die Streikbewegung eintritt, der hat das auch hochgeschrieben, weil er natürlich in staatsbürgerlichem Verantwortungsbewusstsein, in Anführungszeichen pipapo, auf die Einfädelung eines Kompromisses hinaus wollte. Das heißt, das jetzt wird so getan, als sei da was Entscheidendes gekippt, und das ist definitiv nicht der Fall. Also die Streikbewegung wird auch weitergehen. Die Frage ist natürlich, bis wann die Leute Puste und Kraft haben, weil die Leute ja auch finanzielle Einbußen haben. Also inzwischen sind 2,5 Millionen in den Streikkassen, die also durch Spenden der Öffentlichkeit aufgefüllt werden. Also wären 10.000 Leute im Streik, es sind aber mehr im Streik, aber die Leute streiken auch nicht jeden Tag, sondern manche streiken heute und morgen gehen sie zur Arbeit und übermorgen streiken sie wieder. Nur das fahrende Personal in den Verkehrsbetrieben streikt dauernd. Also insofern ist eine Berechnung schwierig. Aber nehmen wir an, es wären 10.000 Leute im Streik, dann wären es 250 Euro pro Nase. Da gibt es aber Leute, die streiken seit 38 Tagen. Das heißt, natürlich verlieren die Leute Geld, die Streikenden. Auch wenn sicherlich die Gelder, die aus Solidaritätskassen kommen, natürlich vor allem auf die am längsten streiken, umverteilt werden, was ja auch richtig ist. Das heißt, bis wohin die Puste sie trägt, wenn jetzt schon aus den Medien einem das Abblasen, die Demobilisierung entgegenschlägt, ist natürlich die Frage, es bleibt zu hoffen, zu wünschen und zu unterstützen, gegebenenfalls, dass es weitergeht. Also die Mehrheit der Gewerkschaften, jedenfalls die am Streik real beteiligt sind, haben schon gesagt, also es ist nichts geregelt und es geht weiter.
Ist davon auszugehen, dass dieser Kompromissvorschlag zu einem Bruch in dieser Gewerkschaftsfront führt, sozusagen dadurch, dass die CFDT zeigt, dass sie einverstanden ist mit diesem Kompromiss?
Aber wie gesagt, die Leute, die tatsächlich streiken, sind relativ wenig bei der CFDT organisiert und noch weniger in ihrem Apparat. Der Bruch ist auch da, weil bei der UNSA, das ist ein sich unpolitisch verstehende Gewerkschaftszusammenschluss, der steht auf ähnlichen Positionen wie die CFDT, was oft der Fall ist im Übrigen, aber innerhalb der UNSA gibt es auch einen Bruch. Weil die UNSA bei der Eisenbahn sagte bereits, jetzt ist gut, während die UNSA bei der RATP, also bei den Pariser Nahverkehrsbetrieben, sagt, das ist Bluff und wir machen weiter. Die UNSA ist die zweitstärkste, also von den Stimmen her, Gewerkschaft bei der Eisenbahn, allerdings.
I gotta start. Yeah.
to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. the tambourine man play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning I come following you. Though I know that evening's empire has returned into sand, vanished from my hand, left me blindly here to stand, but still not sleeping. My weariness amazes me, I am branded on my feet. I have no one to meet, and the ancient empty streets too dead for dreaming. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I come following you. Take me on a trip upon your magic swirling ship. My senses have been stripped, my hands can't feel to grip, my toes too numb to step. Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere, I'm ready for to fade and to my own parade. Cast your dance and spell my way, I promise to go under it. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I come following you. Though you might hear laughing, spinning, swinging madly through the sun, it's not aimed at anyone, it's just escaping on the run. And but for the sky, there are no fences facing. And if you hear vague traces of skipping reels of rhyme to your tambourine in time, it's just a ragged clown behind. I wouldn't pay it any mind. It's just a shadow you're seeing that he's chasing. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I come following you. Disappearing through the smoke rings of my mind, down the foggy ruins of time, far past the frozen leaves, the haunted, frightened trees, out to the windy beach, far from the twisted reach of crazy sorrow. Yes, to dance beneath the diamond sky with one hand waving free, silhouetted by the sea, circled by the circus sands, with all memory and fate driven deep beneath the waves. Let me forget about today until tomorrow. Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you.
Thank you. Thank you.